man is very direct, like, tell me what the issue is. And a woman is very covert. She wants you to almost presume what's happening based on her body. Like, you should know, right? You should know. But it's because women are very attuned when it comes to those sorts of things. They're very emotionally intelligent. So you could come in and see one of your girls and she's upset, she's disgruntled, you know, straight away. Whereas a man, we're not going to pick up on those cues. So the more you learn about, you know, the masculine and feminine and also one another and how you fall within the scope of that, it gives you the better tools to be able to actually bridge the gap of communication, right?
Have you ever wondered whether there's actually a sustainable way to balance a healthy and meaningful life with your busy schedule? Well, you're in luck, Balancer, because I did too. And the Balancery podcast is now a dedicated space to be curious in finding a balance that just works. Because since we're being honest here, balance isn't a one size fits all. I'm your host, Erica, and let's dive into today's episode. All right, Balancers. Today's guests are two gentlemen I've had the pleasure of meeting recently. They are the co-founders of Mentality, which is a space to discuss issues that pertain to men. They're based here in Dubai and they have a range of offerings from media to events and services to encourage personal growth and development, topics that we really bond and resonate with. They continue to build a strong presence here in the city and it's become a catalyst for transformative experiences and meaningful connections, which is how I actually met both of you. And I'm excited to share that experience, which was super unique. I think at the heart of what you guys do is the thought-provoking content, the stuff that not everyone wants to talk about that might be a little bit taboo. So what I really appreciate and loved from our initial interaction was the way you challenged my thinking. So I'm excited to bring that to the audience today and to chat about different things that I maybe haven't spoken about on the show before. So with that being said, Corey and Manny, a warm welcome to the Balancery podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. So I want to just quickly talk about Notches, how I met you guys. So for everyone listening, it was a very one of those moments like that was a little bit serendipitous. I was just scrolling on Instagram and I actually don't often scroll. I just go on to post my stuff and I try not to spend that much time on there. And I saw your post, which was about Notches, which was about an intimate dinner you guys were hosting. And you almost had to sort of apply for it, right? It felt very exclusive. And there was something inside of me that just said, you know what? Just apply, see what this is about, meet some different people. And I obviously love the heart of Mentality and what you guys are trying to achieve with it by talking about topics that pertain to men and personal development and all of that. So I applied and I guess I was one of the lucky chosen ones that got to share in a night of conversation with you guys. And as I said just then, I really enjoyed the challenge and the openness, the space that you guys facilitated. So I'd love to hear from the both of you, if you wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit about your journey to Mentality and I guess your mission in doing what you do.
I think you should start, Manny.
Because it's a longer journey. Okay.
Yeah, it's so, a massive catalyst as to why.
Let me start by saying that I'm so glad that the power within drew you to come into Notches for two reasons. One, three reasons even. One, because it gave you what you needed in terms of an experience and in terms of a takeaway, which is something that Corey and I always aim for when we put an event of any type together. The second is that it's led us to this, to this conversation, and the opportunity to edify even more people. And the third is that it's built a partnership or a friendship that far transcends what we're doing in Mentality or as part of the Balance Theory. It now extends to everyone else on the outside looking in. So I'm really grateful for that. I guess what led me to Mentality was a series of life experiences that almost left me in a very dark place. I grew up like any child would, you know, always aspiring to do really well, but surrounded by incredibly driven people. And on the basis of that, I always thought that I needed to be better than them in order to give back. So I always drove myself to just extreme work ethic, which got me to a point of being very, very successful. And then when that success was then taken away from me, I didn't know where to turn. So the only place that I could turn to was a just very dark spiral into a point of feeling like I no longer wanted to be here. on the other side of that, without getting too deep into that, we could explore that a bit later, but on the other side of that, I knew that I needed a space to heal, but I couldn't find one. And I couldn't find that in my community. I couldn't find that in my family. I couldn't find that in my friends. Well, that's what I thought. So I made the decision that I wanted to build something. I wanted to build a space where people can come have these conversations and it not be taboo, it not be, frowned upon or pity-filled. And in that process, I met Corey. And as I said in other podcasts before, I saw in Corey a younger, stronger, more driven version of me. And it helped me heal. And in helping me heal, we had conversations that led to us both looking at each other thinking, other people need this. And that Amazing. Was my journey into mentality.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And yourself, Corey?
Yeah. So where Manny ends off is a beautiful segue into there where mentality was kind of formed. It was just conversations on his couch. After training sessions, we'd go back to his house, have some food, and have these really deep, meaningful, sometimes esoteric conversations that offered a lot of healing. But we felt like a lot of ideas live and die in those conversations, right? Mm. They happen, we get the value, maybe we perpetuate those, our value kind of exchange throughout society, but how do we continue to give that to other people? And that's where mentality in essence was formed, right? So we literally went away, got a logo together, some mock-ups, Instagram page, started a few Instagram lives, and then mentality was born. But that's where I came into mentality, somewhat at the latter stage. Hence, I said Manny should foreground this, because a lot of what mentality is was a lot of ideation that was happening over time. Mm. And then we happened to meet at the right kind of crossroad. Yep. And then mentality was born.
I always love hearing when what people are doing now, their projects or their businesses or just what they're putting their time into has really just come out of such an organic place that it's almost like all roads have led them to be doing this one thing. You said something really, really interesting, Manny, that I think men, women, everyone can relate to. And it's this need for success and high performance, but at what cost, right? And it's kind of like, I'd be very curious to hear both of your thoughts on this. One thing that I've been very passionate to talk about is this idea of sustainable success, because I think you have a lot of high performers in today's age where the conversation of health is not shoved to the side for the sake of put your head down and enjoy later. Mm-hmm. I think more and more of us are caring more about our mental health, our physical health. We want to be making those things a priority, but it's often a bit of a juggle to fit it in with extremely high ambitions or goals that we have for ourselves. So in terms of, you know, you having that need to, you wanted to be more successful than the others around you. And Corey, I know you're quite driven yourself. I'm curious, how do you, I guess, balance that ambition or that need or drive with the priorities, the things that actually keep you going? Because that's really, to me, what the essence of balance is. It's finding a sustainable way to do that. It's not downplaying our goals. So you can't have big goals because you want balance. It's how do we actually find space for both?
Great question. I think my journey for balance has been or is a result. And I say journey because it's exactly that, right? Mm. I don't think I'm at the destination yet.
I don't think we ever get there, right?
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever get to the destination. I think it's the beauty is an understanding that the journey is what we need to champion. Mm. And that within the journey, we find our peace. And I think that's what a lot of people miss. A lot of people focus their lens on the destination. And so they never really enjoy or get to experience the journey in its fullness. My journey to balance is a result of lots of different things. So family, learning to be a little bit more forgiving to myself, I think is where it started. Because coming out of the experiences I came out of, you tend to kind of beat yourself up. Because even in knowing that you are damaged, if you want to call it that, you still beat yourself up on feeling that way, right? So learning to forgive myself for feeling the way I felt, learning to seek help, learning to be more vulnerable or open to vulnerability, accepting that I may not have all the answers and that I need to go and seek. And seeking doesn't necessarily just mean focusing my lens on one thing, there's lots of different places I can go. It's not just going to the gym. Mm. It could be going and doing yoga. It could be just sitting alone and just, you know, allowing myself to hear my inner thoughts, meditation, lots of different things that I've learned along the way. But I think a big catalyst for me was family. When I say family, not my nuclear family, but my own family, right? So getting married and having children and that kind of thing gives me something else to feel like I belong to. Mm. and feel responsible for, because responsibility is a big burden, right? Mm-hmm. But it's something else that I feel like I contribute to, and I would never want to see, I would never want my son to see or go through some of the things that I've been through in the negative way. Yes, learn how to navigate life, but not in the way that I went through and felt like I had no one.
Mm-hmm. And yourself, yeah. Corey?
I think I first want to go back to the general notion of high performance, because we use these terms and they conflated with many things. And I'd actually go as far as say pseudo performance, because it's not real performance, because performance is what we're prefacing here now, which is maintaining a neutral stance amongst all of the pillars you hold dear to you. So if you are in pursuit of your worthy ideals, wealth, but it's at the detriment of your health, or then you're never truly successful. Mm-hmm. You can only be as successful as the sum of all of your parts. Yeah. Mm. So I always try to bear that in mind with any endeavor. Like if I'm doing A, but it's going to be at the detriment of B, and I hold those two at similar values, I'm gonna have to change course. I'm gonna have to auto-correct. And that comes with the self, right? That comes with introspection, that comes with taking stock of what's actually happening around you, because everything is giving you a feedback loop. Everything is showing you what, or everything was a result of your perpetual daily actions. And once the important things start to fall to the wayside, you have to actually question yourself. Mm. And health is the biggest pillar, because without health, there's nothing. Yeah. So when I see these, the archetype of the very typical quintessential Dubai businessman, and they're out of shape, well then I don't look at that as a successful person. Mm. So for me, there are certain tenets that I stand to and hold very convict in my heart, and I will never push them to the wayside for the sake of other things.
Yeah, I love that. And I guess that comes with actually being clear on what those things are first, which is that self-assessment. And the only thing I'll add to that is actually doing that on a regular basis, because those things that you hold dear or that are priorities or that you value change as time goes on. So like Manny yourself, when you became a father, for example, like your priorities, I assume, would have needed to shift a lot. As you said, there's a responsibility that comes with that. And so doing that value assessment as time goes on, I think is important, because otherwise you know, if you're doing the same thing for 10 years and expecting it to still work for you, or I think it just comes to a point where your routine, as good as it is and it serves you, it also needs to adapt and grow with you too. And so just checking in with yourself is really important. I'd love to circle back to something when it comes to mental health and men in particular. I think, of course, there is this long-standing stereotype of men and their emotions, and you know, there's a whole saga about that. I'm very curious, because you both are quite vocal and I would say open to discussing a more fragile side of yourselves, but I would also say you're both quite strong in your masculine. And so as men, how do you find the balance between holding space for that side of yourself while still honoring or kind of maintaining, I guess for lack of a better word, your masculinity? Or am I maybe looking at it incorrectly? And is there a part of masculinity that is this beautiful, fragile side that we've just not explored before? I'd love to hear your take on it.
I think non-judgment is what comes to mind. Not judging yourself. And this is the general kind of idea of masculine and feminine. We look at it in very binary terms. Mm-hmm. The completely masculine man is broken, and the completely feminine woman is also broken. You need to have mixtures of both. It's the yin and the yang, right? So when we talk about things as it pertains to the emotional scope, that is typically in more of the feminine realm. A little bit harder to quantify. So hence men push that to the wayside, because man is logic, man is form, right? Man is things that we can quantify and make tangible, right? Man is mind, right? So you can see why men struggle with the ideas of their mental health, because you can't quantify those things. You can't get a full rein on those things. And then you start to judge those things and actually say, well, that's my fallen masculinity, or that's not me living within my masculinity. But understanding that you've got to experience the range of emotions. Don't over-identify with any of the experiences you're having, and understand that you need rain and sunshine. Mm. And both are okay. It's when you start to identify with those thoughts, when you start to build affinity with those thoughts, that it can start to consume you. And that's what leads to the negative spiral, in my opinion.
And isn't that like almost trying to have a logical take on something that's not quantifiable? Because yeah. I can yeah. say in honesty, like I feel like that's something I've done before too, like try to have logic or justify or rationale with my emotions or different fragile moments I've had, when really you just need to be sometimes and process. Do you, Corey, have any particular practice or habit or thing that helps you in those moments where you do feel you need to have that space that's less rational, less just like logical and just existing? Like, do you have something that's actually quite practical that you do? That's a bit of a funny question because we're trying to make something like quite logical, yeah. but you know what I mean? Like a habit or something.
Yeah. Just general detachment. I understand that my thoughts are not me. Anything you can observe cannot be yourself. I'm here, I'm observing you both. Neither of you are me, mm-hmm. right? We are consciousness. So thoughts are accumulations of experiences. So if I go throughout my day and see loads of red cars, I'm going to have this consistent thought of red cars. Does that mean I'm a red car? Absolutely not, right? So it's quite asinine to build your identity around your consistent thought frames. Now, obviously, we want to be cognizant of our thought frames and move them in a positive trajectory. But understand that some thoughts are just passing, mm-hmm. and that's okay. And as long as you don't jump on them, things will be fine. Like, some of the things that go through my mind are crazy. I actually wouldn't even want to share them, right? But it's okay. And I kind of take that as my general stance in life. Mm. Because if you're going to sit and try to rigorously vet all of your thoughts all of the time, you know, what else are you ever going to achieve?
Drive yourself mad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
No, detachment's beautiful, but I think it's a tough skill to learn, and one that definitely takes practice. Mm. I think just through my own practice with meditation is a way I've tried to practice that in my own life. But I can even say there are moments where I feel I'm not as good at it than others. So again, back to the journey thing, it's like an ongoing thing.
Absolutely.
Manny, what about yourself? Any thoughts around
this? I was going to say Corey is quite a unique character when it comes to detachment. There aren't many people. He's an anomaly in that respect that can get the level of detachment that he has. I think for the, if you would allow me to coin the word average, for the average person.
It's not for the Buddha over here.
I mean, he looks like one. Minus the size. No, but for the rest of us, to use that phrase instead, it takes a lot of practice, and it takes things like meditation. It takes, you know, spending a moment listening to that quiet voice inside. For me, it's prayer. I grew up in a house that I would say was quite religious. But I got to a point where religion for me wasn't what I chose to follow. I chose to follow faith. So faith for me is the understanding of things that you may not see necessarily, mm-hmm. that may not be so logical, but that you choose to believe will lead you in the right direction. And I think that's what keeps me. It's that understanding, that moment to say, okay, cool. Let me just try and allow things to be. Mm-hmm. And whatever way it goes, it's okay. I'll find my way through. I guess if you dilute that down to common day talk, is that whole aspect of what won't kill me. What was it?
What won't kill me will make me stronger.
Yeah, will make me stronger. Yeah. Mm. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This conversation we're having of like holding space for yourself reminds me of a conversation we had at Notches, mm-hmm. which kind of kickstarted the whole dinner or the whole evening, which was this idea of holding space for other people. And we were talking about authenticity. And I think, you know, for anyone listening, irrespective whether you're in a relationship or not, I think the desire or the interest to have authentic connections with people or to get to know people's authenticity is one that's not only limited to romantic relationships, but even friendships in the workplace. And so I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on this idea of an authentic person, what that actually looks like, how we know if someone's being their authentic self. Is it an inward journey? Is it something, you know, just your own kind of experiences on this? I recall we had a very interesting conversation on it.
Yeah. I think it's someone who stands by their own convictions and lives by their own volition, generally speaking. Can that lack morality? I guess so. However, they're living within their truth. They're living and moving within their sovereignty. And we recognize those things, whether we like to accept it or not, whether we respect it or not, we see it because there's an energetic vibration that someone moves at, right? And I would say with that thought frame, you're always going to have people around you that support that, right? You go where you are kind of revered, yeah, not just tolerated, right? So it's very obvious to see. I guess if you want to make it very tangible, think about the dissonance between what people say and what they actually do, because that is also very obvious, right? If someone's saying one thing and then doing another thing, well, then they're probably not living within their authenticity. Now, there are cohorts of people that ascribe to the idea of fake it till you make it. And I get that because at the end of the day, that's an active form of manifestation. However, when you're going through that part of the journey, understand that people are going to question your convictions and question your authenticity, if you will.
I think that's an interesting point because in the context, let's say if you're on a date, right, it's hard to see that up front. I think, and correct me if you disagree, I think authenticity is something you see over time because, again, if it's that disconnect between what people say and what they do, you need time for them to show you that. It's quite difficult to know that in an initial interaction.
I lean on something that Corey touched on fleetingly, in that people gravitate to where they're revered, right? And I think authenticity is that word within itself is, it's not the right word for this because we are literally mirrors of how people treat us. So essentially you go and using the date scenario as an example, you will consider someone to be authentic if they hold the same moral value as you, right? So if you're operating within your own agency and that person reflects what you believe in and the way you approach life, then you consider that person to be authentic. If they don't, then you gravitate away from them. So I don't know, is that authenticity or is that just you seeking somebody who just looks like you?
I think, well, there's more nuance to it than that. Just because what typically happens is when you're your authentic self, you tend to gravitate around people irrespective of the differences that are more likely to be like you. So that's where you see the mirror imaging. But just from my own personal perspective, I can appreciate someone's authenticity and still decide not to be around them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's like you said, it doesn't always come down to morals either. It might be contra your morals, but they're still being authentic to their own moral compass.
How do you judge that?
It's based off your own compass, I guess. You know what I mean? So
you have to be very in tune to recognize those sorts of things. You have to be very in tune because we can, like I said, we can give it tangible form, but a lot of these things operate at the energetic realm. And again, these things are very esoteric. They're very convoluted. They're difficult to explain. But we feel it. You know, it's like when you see a child, child's always authentic.
Yeah, because they know no other way.
Yeah, but I would actually give you the complete polar opposite of that. And there's always similarity in the polarity, which is an old person. They're generally also always authentic because they've gone through life and they've been posing as someone who they're not, only to realize that life is very short now. And I've got no time to not be myself. So those two ends of the spectrum, you normally see the most authenticity. And it's the people in the middle that get judged for their authenticity because that's when all of the societal nuances, that's when all of the societal learnings, that's when the indoctrination is most prevalent. But it exists in those two polarities. But you can't, how do you know if an old person's authentic? How do you know if a child's authentic? Just by a glance, because you can feel it.
Yeah, that's true. And I think just what's jumping out at me is what's common between a child and an old person is, I think, the absence of judgment against themselves.
Exactly.
So it comes back to what you said before. And I think something that's empowering, or I guess a takeaway for anyone listening, we're all kind of in that middle category, right? Where we're not a child and we're not an elderly person yet, where if you can refrain from judging yourself, you can lean more into your own authenticity. And then you know, everyone can be authentic to themselves and we're not all made to get along and like each other. That's fine. But I think it's an interesting thing to just think about authenticity, your own, other people's, and how that plays out in interaction.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I want to shift the conversation a little bit into the topic of masculinity. We've touched on it a little bit. I'd love to hear both your thoughts on whether you feel there's been a decline in masculinity. Maybe we can start with how you both actually define masculinity in general, and then whether you think there's been a decline. And I bring this up because I can't stop thinking about the conversation we were having about the rise of women in the workforce. There was like a historic timeline and the way we've got men in society today. I found it super interesting and I really wanted to bring the conversation to the show. So maybe we can start with, what is masculinity to both of you? And do you feel there's been a decline in modern day society?
I think for me, it's to be masculine is to operate within your own agency or with a sovereign mindset, is to champion the things you believe in and to stand by it. In essence, if we are made to protect and provide, then that's essentially what we'll do, right? Mm-hmm. We'll protect till death, and we'll provide when there is no other way.
To add to what, because Manny put it very well, to kind of build upon that, is to live by those truths, those tenets, irrespective of the outcomes. Because a lot of times you'd be vilified, cancelled, if you will, and potentially put in harm's way in doing so, but would you still make those same actions? Because your convictions as a man, as a protector, needs to also compilate your cohort's consensus, right? The women and the children within society. So are you willing to put yourself at risk to help those people and make sure that you protect those people? I think that's very important. And I think what we see, again, a lot of pseudo-masculinity, as I like to say, is men putting their own consensuses before the consensus of everyone else. Mm. And you're seeing the trickle effect of these conversations and how they're actually affecting the everyday, not only man, but woman, and also, by extension, the children. So I think you can't divorce yourself or your masculinity away from everyone else, because if we are the protectors of society, well, then anything that comes into our society to some degree has been tacitly approved to me. I know we always have these we always have these sorts of conversations, but yeah, at some point it has had to penetrate that masculine barrier, or the lack of masculinity, if that will. Yeah.
I wonder if the way our modern societies, governments, if you will, the way they're set up and run has made that more difficult, especially in the last few years, certain global events, people potentially not being as confident to have that die by the sword mentality. It's kind of more a go with the herd type mentality. I think where I want to take this conversation and ask you guys, I consider myself to be a very strong woman, and I know there are a lot of strong women in society who maybe resonate with what you just described as masculinity, as like, hey, that's kind of my mentality too. Where I want to take this is, I see myself in a relationship with a very masculine man as well. And I think for a lot of women, it's quite difficult for them to lean into their feminine energy, because they've almost had to, or because of the way society is these days, because of what they're doing day to day, they lean into a lot of masculine energy as well. And so what I want to ask the both of you is, how do you see your role as supporting or being with strong women, just in general terms? Maybe it's not specific to both your experiences right now, but just in general, as a man being with a very strong woman, how can they support her so she can be who she is, but in a safe way that she can embrace her femininity? Because I think it's an interesting one where a lot of women don't want to let that guard down, They don't want to let it go. You know, they feel like they need to be independent and do it all themselves. And I can understand why that is the case. Mm. But then I wonder, is that because there's a lack of support, or are they filling a gap almost for a masculine energy that's not in their life? I don't know if I've asked the question succinctly or not, but this is generally what I'd like to get your thoughts on.
Yeah. I'd actually like to pose a question back to yourself just for the sake of making it very succinct. When we talk about strength, are we talking about masculinity or are we talking about strength? Because to me, a strong woman isn't a woman whose perpetual station is her masculinity. That's actually the antithesis of what I would consider to be a strong woman. So when we're talking about strength, what is it we're actually talking about? Are we talking about a woman who's in her divine femininity? Or are we talking about a woman who's struggles to kind of draw herself from a masculine frame into a feminine frame?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, because that's a very interesting question, what you've just posed back to me. But I think what I'm talking about is women being in their masculine energy and being there because there is a lack of support, or they feel they don't have that elsewhere. And so they're unable to, because I interestingly spoke about this a few weeks ago, how being softer as a woman is a strength, because you are in those, you're in that creative energy, you're in this beautiful place, which is kind of where we feel, or I feel myself, like really flowy, and it's easeful for me to be there. It's not this slog. So I think, to answer your question and to throw it back at you, it's for us women who feel stuck or more pulled in our masculine.
Well, I'd say that it's twofold. Society supports that consensus, and we can go back as far as even just prior to the first wave feminism, when men went off to war and women had to replace men in the workforce. And then what happened was the men came back, a lot of them were injured soldiers and maybe couldn't work. So women ended up picking up the slack, but everything sits under the overarching umbrella, which is capitalism. And now in essence, you got two people, both man and woman, working for half the wage. So you kind of need a woman to work. And you think about, you know, I always say form creates function. Man is made to work. You know what I mean? Woman is made to nurture, right? You have the nurturing natural capabilities, and your form also supports that. That doesn't mean we can't cross over. I'm just saying it's not completely binary. But with that, it supports women being in their masculine framework, because you spend more time at work than you do anywhere else. If you work a 9-to-5, that is, right? Or any just entrepreneurial endeavor. So with that, women are made to bear the burdens of performance that was assigned to the masculine framework, which pushes women into their masculinity. And now with this, the ideas of masculinity and manhood being so perverted and turned on its head, you got men acting within their feminine framework, and then that creates a dissonance, isn't it, right? So you got women who are, you know, in essence, perpetually masculine, which is a weakness, and you got men who are perpetually feminine, which is also a weakness. And there's no polarity that exists there, because the true polarity is a man more in his masculine frame and a woman more in her feminine frame in most cases. So I think to speak about it at a nuclear level, we've got to also speak about it at a societal level and speak about how our own actions are an act of activism towards changing this. And we're either moving in that trajectory or we're pushing against it. But the pushing against it was going to be the few, not the many.
I think it's, before I hand over to you, Manny, I just think it's something really interesting. Most of our listeners are females. And I think it comes to this interesting time, Manny, we were speaking about it very briefly before we jumped on the podcast, where you're considering stepping into that nurturer role, becoming a mother, right? That's something I'm thinking about now. But I also have this cross with a lot of things I want to achieve. And that's not to say that if I want to achieve stuff that that's masculine, but I do feel a very big different energetic kind of pull in both directions. And so I think it's just interesting for everybody to reflect on the origin of women in the workforce, and it's absolutely not a bad thing. I actually feel blessed to live in a time where I have opportunity, but I think it's interesting when you peel it away and come back to source and come back to energy and just think about what that means for our society, for a nuclear family, for different bits and pieces. So I'm very grateful to have this conversation and just kind of hear your thoughts. But Manny, thoughts on the subject?
I'm glad that Corey took it took us chronologically back a little bit. I think I would like to also ask you a question. You mentioned feeling like you're very strong, very or you lent into your masculine quite a bit, but then you're in a relationship where your partner is also quite masculine, right? In that, do you feel that you have to lead, or do you allow him to lead within that relationship?
So I feel this relationship has taught me how to let go of the reins, because I've had a safe space to do so. Whereas before, in previous relationships, I mean, I came from a family, my parents have a very interesting backstory. They got divorced, then they remarried each other, then they got divorced again. So very turbulent. I mean, I always had two loving parents. I've got nothing to complain about. But in terms of a nuclear family and how I saw relationships, it was very much like, I need to fend for myself. So being in this relationship has been the first time where I'm starting to see my softnesses as strength, because I have a safe space and a safe outlet somewhere where I'm supported to achieve the things I want to achieve, and I can be as bold and as much of a leader as I like, but I am valued for being a nurturer. I'm valued for things that I didn't even know I cared about myself.
Amazing. And my answer is going to be very short in comparison. And it's beautiful that you said what you said, because that's exactly where I'm going. I've always said that a leader is not somebody who drags or pushes someone into a direction. A leader is somebody who actually acts a certain way, has their own moral beliefs, has that sovereignty and that agency that I spoke about earlier, and in doing so inspires others to follow, right? And so as a man, the best thing you can do for your partner is to actually believe the stuff that comes out of your mouth and live by it, right? Be that person that you've chosen
to be. Be authentic.
Be authentic. And in doing so, she can then decide, is this somebody I trust enough to let go of the reins and allow to lead me into the right place or not? And I think that's the turning point. When you as a man can realize that this is where you need to be and this is who you are, the rest will fall in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Galvanizing. You need to galvanize that. And there's this term submission. A woman should submit to me, et cetera, et cetera. And it has subservient connotations. However, let's put that, the idea of submission to a side, and let's call it fellowship. In doing so, the woman's never really following the man. She's following the man's mission.
Correct.
She's following what he places himself before, whether that be his faith, whether that be his entrepreneurial endeavors and what he's going to create as a, his worthy ideal, if you will. Whether that be the sort of family values he wants to kind of create and co-create with her in the household, that's what she's following. Yeah. She's not following the man. And when you understand that, that allows you to be a better leader and galvanize and really give sovereign choice, because it's not by the, you know, the might of my fist that she's following me. It's a choice.
Yeah. But as Erica said as well, it made us feel safe. Right? It's the safety element. It's a safe place to be like, okay, well, I don't have to think about that. Let me go and think about other things.
Absolutely.
Let me go and think about maybe having some children and, you know, bringing up the next generation. Let me think about building the home, because that's one thing that we as men struggle with sometimes, because we're so about going out and hunting and bringing the bread home. We don't usually focus on building the home. And building the home is very important, because this is where we have to live. Right? So when both men and women are not at home, that home then becomes broken. And that's
empty.
When you have children in there that don't know where to look, and
it's
then
also home.
And then it's a perpetuating cycle. And so this is, you know, as we've both said, that place where a man needs to be that leader that he hopes others will follow. The idea of submission is exactly that, is saying, okay, cool, listen, you do what you're doing, and I'll pace in behind, because I know you're covering me.
I love what you both said, and another thing I'll add, I think aside to feeling like there's a safe space, is I don't feel my, like, who I am in terms of what I want, that's not threatened by me being with a strong man either, which I think a lot of women get kind of frightful of. They feel, it comes back to that idea of, am I being like a submissive kind of housewife? There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. But I think just as a very traditional stereotype, I think feeling that like their ambitions or what they want is threatened is something that plays on people's mind and why they don't like to let go of the reins. But Corey, I love what you shared in that you almost come together and you believe in the same things. Mm. And I can really resonate with that because us moving to Dubai has been to create a future life for ourselves. We believe in where we're going and we're on the same team. It's not I'm supporting his dream or he's supporting my dream. We're actually creating something together. Mm. And that means we play different roles in making that happen. Mm. And if we go even down to the micro level, like we've spoken about, I guess, the dynamic in a relationship between the masculine and the feminine, not that it's like this binary separate thing. There are definitely crossovers, but on a high level. But even on the day-to-day, you know, there are days where maybe he's going through a little bit more of a fragile moment and I need to step it up and hold that space for him and be the one that's making the decisions and then vice versa, right? We kind of go through ebbs and flows and it's a partnership and we're on the same team at the end of the day. I'm curious to know from both your perspectives and you're both in a heterosexual relationship. So we're going to talk about this in the context of a male and a female together. How do you feel best supported by your female counterpart so you can be that provider, you can be the person that leads the family in a sense? What are things that they do for you that help you actually be better at what you do?
There's so many.
like if you had to say there were like the top things that you couldn't live without.
I would say trust. Trust in our process, trust in my process, trust in our current station and trust in we're going to be moving in the direction that supports not only our relationship, but whatever our worthy ideals are. Because I think oftentimes you have two types of individuals and they're juxtaposed. You've got people that walk by sight and you've got people that walk by faith. And when a man is building, especially in that building phase, oftentimes he's walking by faith. Now, if the woman doesn't see the results or it become manifest in a time that she deems to be respectable or, you know, tangible, she can start to put pressure on you. And the pressure is not the issue. It's what it does to that divine connection and that polarity, because in her becoming distrusting, she's moving out of her feminine frame. And I always say a woman's feminine energy will magnify. Man bears his seed and a woman brings life. She multiplies it. She's a multiplier. So in that trusting state, that's the state where you can multiply. So as long as she can remain trustful, that's always a good place. And that's one of the kind of general things I would go on amongst other things. But I also think that is a reflection of the man and how true he is being with his own self, how authentic, how much his actions are consistent with his own thought processes and the mission he's relayed before her, because you're going to have these sorts of conversations, right? So if there's a dissonance between what you say and what you do, that's going to kill the polarity, which in essence is going to lead to her losing respect for you and she's never going to be able to trust you. So it goes both ways, but that's one of the things that is most prevalent when you ask a question for me.
Love that.
Beautiful.
Trust is definitely there, and anecdotally I can validate that is true. Is trusting that you're making the decisions that are going to lead you as a unit in the right directions. I think one of the other things that I hold very close to me is the power of communication. Because in order to trust, you need to be able to communicate, right? In order to love, and you need to be able to and we're constantly evolving creatures, people. Whether you like it or not, you will evolve based on societal stimuluses, religious stimuluses, corporate stimuluses, whatever the case may be. And so being able to hold space and communicate the things that are changing within your own framework. And so if you need to shift from the path that you were already walking because a new path has presented itself as better, being able to communicate that in such a way where now she can make a decision with you and say, okay, cool, I understand. Hence where the trust comes in. I understand that this is for our benefit. But if you don't do that, which sometimes doesn't happen between men and women, you're now walking this path, now you're behaving slightly differently, even though you're doing it with the right intention, she no longer believes that you are walking to that destination that you've communicated to her before. So communication is extremely important. It's something that I think that we as humanity need to get better at because we don't do it well enough.
Yeah. And I can speak to that communication vein in terms of that as being a place where I've fallen short before. And not out of not wanting to communicate, but rather I'm the sort of person, I can change things very, very quickly. I'm like, okay, we've got this new kind of, you know, Rolodex of information. We're changing this. Mm-hmm. And before I've even communicated that, I've already deployed that. Mm-hmm. But now my what I've said and my actions, you know, seem juxtaposed. So it's a constant conversation. It's a constant conversation. I'm a massive advocate of not only communication, but even bringing some formality to that communication, you know, having check-ins. It could be weekly, it could be daily, it could be, you know, quarterly. Just to see where you're both at, you know, personally and then, you know, collaboratively. I think that's also very important.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, I used to feel, and I think maybe it's because of what I went through and seeing my parents. I remember being 18 and thinking, you know, maybe you are just meant to be with people for a certain period in your life. Maybe they're just meant to serve you for this version and then it's fine if you kind of grow apart and they no longer serve you. I can see that with my parents and that was my view of relationships. What I'm very grateful that I've learned, and it's reminding me of this conversation, is that you can have two people that grow and change their mind, but if you have that communication, if you have that faith in one another and that love, which is underlying, really, you can grow together. But I think what is quintessential to that is the communication. Because if you are changing your mind, if you are having different ideas or you're interested in something that's different to what you were interested in before, having that open space where you can communicate is so important. Because otherwise you wake up one day and you think, who the hell am I going to bed with every night? Who am I waking up with? I don't know this person, because you haven't spoken about the things that matter most. So having that space, and if we want to make that even really practical, like one thing for me that's a non-negotiable is dinner time together with no phones, no tech, no nothing. We play cards, we talk, you know, sometimes dinner's 15 minutes, sometimes it's an hour, it doesn't matter. For me, it's that daily check-in. Mm-hmm. I know what's going on in your life. I know, you know, you can share, it's a space for you to share things with me so that I can, we can grow together. And it's often times where one person's having, you know, a big growth or change in their life. And then other times it's going to be on me where I'm having different ideals, but having that constant communication is important to grow together. So I've now shifted from thinking that people are there to serve you at different moments or different versions of yourself to understanding that, hey, if you have that strong enough bond, you can actually grow together. But that communication is so important.
Love for me is the opening up of yourself in such a way that you say, listen, I'm letting you see the deepest parts of me, right? And so if I'm giving you that, which is so like deep to me, right? If I'm handing that to you and we can't navigate together, then what journey are we really walking together, right? Mm. But to your point about dinner times are a great time. I also do, we also practice gratefulness. So before bed, because I find that dinner, when you're just about to fall into that dream state, building something together then flows through the things that you think about as you sleep. And then you wake up the next morning reinvigorated, ready to go and champion the day. And so we do gratefulness, right? It's just a simple, what are your three gratefuls for today? Beautiful. And it could be something as simple as, listen, I'm grateful I made it home. I'm grateful that, you know, I had lunch. I'm great. But that then sets your mind to thinking, okay, well, listen, I actually appreciate this moment in time with you.
Mm. So nice.
And you can then, if that then leads into a next conversation about things that you've experienced through the day, then, you know, so be it. But
Another thing we like to do is, I think goal setting at the beginning of the year is something you can look at as very secular, like it's about me, it's about what I want. But what we've started to do is not only share our personal goals with one another, but talk about what goals we have as a couple, as a family, in our future, where we're going, what we're trying to build. And I think just adding that into your frame of reference in terms of, you're not only building and growing as a person, but you're doing that actively as a couple. Like, I feel like it's so easy to take for granted a beautiful bond with someone and think, oh, we're together and that's kind of it and we're just moving through life together, but to actively attune yourself to where you want to go, even asking, how can I be a better partner? Mm-hmm. You know, how can I support you better? That's a question I ask a lot, because I was very used to assuming that I was doing it right all the time. You know, like I knew best, but we have very different communication styles. I remember in our early days, like 8 years ago when we met, if we disagreed about something, he was the kind of person who needed time to mull over it, or I wanted to talk about it straight away. So learning to know each other's communication styles and actually asking, like you would in a job as well, like you want that feedback to be able to improve, asking your partner, like, how can I better serve you? How can I hold space for you? Or vice versa, if you feel like you're not being supported, actually opening up that conversation saying, hey, this is actually how you can support me better, or how I would prefer to be. Like, I'm not great with feedback. I take it really personally. It's something I'm working on. But even the way he like gives me feedback or coaches me through things, you know, something I've had to say, look, I'm a bit sensitive here. Can you, you know, fluff around it a little bit just for me so I can receive it in a better way, I think is, it's good to strengthen that communication piece, right?
I think even, and that's why having conversations like this are so great, because we understand the masculine and the feminine realms. Because I think when, you know, a man is communicating to a woman and a woman is communicating to a man, we're looking at it through our own inherent lenses or gazes. And man is very direct, like, tell me what the issue is. And a woman is very covert. She wants you to almost presume what's happening based on her body. Like, you should know, right? You should know. But it's because women are very attuned when it comes to those sorts of things. They're very emotionally intelligent. So you could come in and see one of your girls and she's upset, she's disgruntled, you know, straight away. Whereas a man, we're not going to pick up on those cues. So the more you learn about, you know, the masculine and feminine and also one another and how you fall within the scope of that, it gives you the better tools to be able to actually bridge the gap of communication, right? Bridge the pillow gap, which was one of our events, right? To be able to do that in best stead, because I think when we think about communication, we think about it in a very binary sense, which is typically lends itself to the male gaze, which is be direct, tell me what the issue is. But then what happens is the feminine side of things gets very much neglected in that. Lead to frustration, resentment, etc. So I think as a man, you need to be cognizant of enough to be able to communicate with your woman or the women of significance in your life in a way that she can best receive it. Because the saying things is one thing, but you need to say it in a way that it can be received. And that's the important nuance that a lot of people miss when communicating with opposite sex.
Yeah, and it's like that, the difference between communicating and comprehending. You can communicate with someone, whether they're comprehending is like a total different question. And I think it's just a parting thought before we wrap it up for any females listening who maybe feel like they're not seen or heard. I think actually opening up that conversation in terms of how your partner can better serve you, or educating them, I guess, in a way of and almost assuming they have that default set of just being direct. So it's not like a personal thing and then they're not doing it against you. They're just programmed, I guess, or that's their default settings. I think teaching them or walking them through communicating how you feel, how you like to receive feedback, I think is good to strengthen that.
Communication is very important, but I think oftentimes when we approach communication, we approach it from a place of speaking. The most important part of communication is listening.
Amen.
And listening actively and being able to read beyond just the words that are coming out of someone's mouth. So if we can learn to do that, if we can learn to just pause, quiet out the outside noise and just be in the moment and receive what someone's actually saying to us, I think then you really start actually, you know, capturing the power of what real communication is. And so, as you said, to those that may be watching, both male and female, learn to speak, yes, great. Communicate the things you want, great. But learn to be still and listen to what you're being told in response to what you're saying. And that's the only way you'll know how to build and galvanize and be able to move forward.
Beautiful. I just want to thank the both of you so much for your time. I always love having conversations with the two of you. You guys challenge me, you expand my perspective and open my mind up to different ways of thinking that I'm always, always grateful for. So I look forward to the many conversations that we're going to have in the future. And I thank you both for your time today.
Amen to that.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinez.
I'm Kayla Itzinez, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.